Now, it's a great thing to write about soccer, and particularly in an environment when there are so many Indigenous sports people really coming to the fore, and have been for a long, long time. But do you have a strong connection to the game of football yourself? When did that start?
Yeah, it started as a kid. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs in Newcastle, Adamstown, which has a very long history. I mean, there were a number of several, you know, famous Newcastle clubs who were originated in the late 19th century. British miners set up these clubs like Adamstown, Wallsend, West Wallsend. Mm-hmm. And some of those clubs are as old as Everton and Liverpool and Manchester United. I mean, so there's a long history. So I grew up in Adamstown, and there was several, you know, junior soccer grounds straight out the front of my family home. So there was an attraction.
Yeah. Did you play yourself back then?
I did.
Bit of a striker?
Newcastle in the Newcastle competition. So, yeah, and I loved the game.
Yeah, it's really good. The book begins in the period of colonisation, and you speak about the rich sporting culture that existed amongst Aboriginal people well before the British arrived as well. What did that sporting culture look like, and how important was it in dealing with the impacts of colonisation?
Yeah, absolutely. I say this in the book, and I mean, it's understood that we were a sporting culture before 1788, and I mean, it was a necessity in many respects. We were to be fit and healthy and athletic. There was one guy, Herbert Basdo, who said that the Aboriginal people were like the sporting traditions of the Spartans in Greece. They focused that much on you know, athleticism and certainly that sort of stuff. So, and there were forms of football. I mean, we know Mangrook with AFL. I mean, but they were playing with a round ball. It wasn't a wobbly ball.
Oh, right. So Mangrook was actually played with a round ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a ball made of, leather, you know, and kangaroo skins, possum skins. And I mean, and there was the game that certainly has connections to soccer. And I use the word soccer instead of football because, you know, with blackfellas, I mean, you mentioned football, it's either rugby league or AFL.
Yeah, sure.
So we need to differentiate. For us, it's soccer, you know. But in traditional times, I mean, it was recognised it was a keepy-uppy game, you know, with the ball. I mean, so it was bouncing the ball up. The object was not to let it hit the ground. So, you know, it's like, and I actually mentioned in the book, it's like Brazilians, like Ronaldinho, you know, bouncing the ball up and down and keeping it up off the ground. So it's been a long tradition of, you know, that sort of sporting culture.
Of course, you track a whole bunch of time from exactly pre-colonisation to colonisation, but then you talk about a lot of the achievements of players from the post-war period. But you talk about some of the barriers that really prevented Aboriginal people from playing sport before that time. How bad was it back then?
Oh, it was extremely bad. I mean, there was certainly a colour bar of exclusion. I mean, we look back to the 19th century. We had the first cricket tour, Australian team to tour England. A cricket tour was an Aboriginal cricket tour in 1868. You know, some great players. I mean, they won half their games and they drew half their games. I mean, there were some great players, you know, in that particular team. And Aboriginal people had been encouraged to play cricket. But from the late 19th century, suddenly the barriers erupted to prevent Aboriginal players playing those games. And that was the same with, and I'll say football here, rugby league and AFL. There were certainly barriers in all of these games and sport. Look at cricketer Eddie Gilbert, who bowled Don Bradman for a duck. I mean, he was picked to play for Queensland, and yet he wasn't allowed to sleep in the same hotel as the rest of the Queensland players. He had to sleep out in the backyard of the hotel. I mean, you know, these are the sort of barriers. Wally MacArthur should have run and represented Australia in the 50s in the Commonwealth and Olympic Games. And again, it was the barriers that stopped MacArthur, you know, representing his country. And there's a whole host of Aboriginal men and women, talented sportsmen and women, who were denied the opportunities of, you know, achieving what they could have done in the sporting arena. And in many respects, soccer was different, particularly in post-World War II, because of the migrant communities coming, the Greeks, the Italians, the Hungarians, the Dutch, you know, the Poles. I mean, there was a whole host of people, and they brought a love of soccer. And certainly, and I mean, I mentioned three prominent Aboriginal players, Charlie Perkins, John Moriarty and Gordon Briscoe. They were all in a home in South Australia, St Francis Home, for Aboriginal kids who've been separated from their families. And for whatever reason, there was an interest in playing soccer. And Johnny Moriarty actually said in an interview with me that there's kids they were playing with a tennis ball in very confined spaces with groups of kids, 6 and 8 aside, and this sort of thing with a tennis ball. And he said from a very young age, we developed a lot of great skills. And that's where they got their start. And down in Adelaide, they were encouraged by teams of British teams, particularly the Scotch and the Irish gave Aboriginal people a go, but more importantly, the Greeks and the Croatians and the Italians. And John Moriarty said as a young teenager, he finished up, he was taken to Italian restaurants and fitted out with an Italian suit. And Charles Perkins finished up playing for Panhellenic, the top Greek side in Sydney.
Right.
And there was a lot of support for those young men. Gordon Briscoe said to me at the time when we broke through with soccer, he said the AFL, he said we loved AFL as well, but they wouldn't let us use the same change rooms. They wouldn't pay us. But he said the migrant communities had accepted us for who we were. There was no question raised on our colour, on our background, on our race. It was just total acceptance, and we'd never experienced anything like that before.
It's quite amazing that the migrant community, having been welcomed into Australia, but they were much more welcoming and accepting of our Indigenous people than the actual other people that lived here. It's quite eye-opening to sort of hear that.
And that's right. And you've got to understand, those migrant communities were copping a backlash as well. And that's one thing that the game itself had to overcome, because it immediately got the tag of wombat. That's the racism of this country, in regards to that, because anything of difference, the wider community was going to target. So, and that's a term that Johnny Warren coined, So those barriers, but there was a coming together of different groups, and as I said, they were supported into the game.
We're talking to John Maynard, the author of The Aboriginal Soccer Tribe. He's released a updated and second edition of the best-selling book from 2011. You've included some new chapters and covered some Pacific Island players as well. Can you tell us a bit about that and who you decided to include?
Yeah, well, three very prominent players, of course. Frank Farina, Archie Thompson, and, of course, the great Tim Cahill. You couldn't have three better players that had represented the Socceroos. Cahill, the record goal scorer and, over 100 caps for Australia. And Farina and Archie Thompson, in their own time, also great goal scorers. And all three played in Europe at high levels, so outstanding players. So, yeah, I felt it was important to include the Islanders in that respect, which was an oversight in the previous edition.
I think a lot of people don't realise Tim Cahill was half Samoan. People maybe just bypass that thought. Just didn't even think about it. But it's good that you've brought that up.
Yeah. Well, I think Tim is very proud of his Samoan background. And, that's part of his culture. And he spent time over there as a kid, So it was he's very strong on his culture and it's very important to him.
Yeah.
And his family, evident. And I actually said, that's one thing about Tim Cahill, and I look back about 2010, to sell the game of soccer in this country, you can have all these international visitors flying into Sydney. In 2010, I got off the plane in Sydney and there was this massive big billboard with Tim Cahill on it selling Bravia, Sony Bravia TVs.
Right.
Every person coming into Sydney from overseas immediately can connect with Tim Cahill because he's a worldwide brand. He's easily identifiable. But you couldn't do the same thing with Australian Rugby League or AFL players, to international tourists. They wouldn't have a clue who they were.
That's true.
Reality.
You also write about the participation of Aboriginal women in football, particularly the Aboriginal Matildas team. What's the history of Indigenous women and the game? Because it's not something I know too much about.
Yeah, look, there's a long tradition of Aboriginal players who've played for the Matildas. It goes back to Karen Menzies, was the first Aboriginal Matilda back in the 70s and 80s. a great player. And right through to today, we've got Kaya Simon and Lydia Williams.
Yeah.
Bridget Starr was another brilliant player that played for the Socceroos. So, and we've got quite a number of young ones coming through now as well. So the women's game has really sort of taken off, I think. And I mean,
sure is.
You know, for Indigenous girls and women to be involved with, I actually say in the book as well, I think the game's gone backwards, you know, as far as male participation. And I really do point the finger at the FFA and, you know, and officials and, you know, government in regards to that. They've got to get out and do a lot more to promote and try and, you know, inspire the game into our communities. And there's great opportunities in this incredible world game, you know, so we need to do that.
Definitely, definitely. Well, it's really exciting that you've really nice cover on the book. You've republished it in the second edition through Fair Play Publishing. I'm sure you can jump online at Fair Play Publishing or find it in any good bookshop. But, yeah, congratulations on releasing and, yeah, good luck with the book.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mick. And that's it is a great cover. I mean, that's an image from the 1950s of Aboriginal kids at La Perouse chasing a soccer ball. So, and that's the early 1950s. So it's a great image.